Well, I don't think we have quite a quorum yet, but why don't we start with Commissioner Koester? And when we get to a quorum, I'll temporarily interrupt him and officially start the meeting and adopt the minutes. And Assistant Commissioner, would you state your name for the record so the tape can pick it up?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wes Koester, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Chemical and Mental Health Services, the Department of Human Services, and with me is Don Allen, who manages our budget legislative work in our area.
We now have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order, and Representative Fritz moves the minutes. I know she's had a lot of time to look at them.
So moved.
Any discussion of the minutes? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes are adopted. And if we could restrict our questions to just sort of simple clarifying questions during the main presentation and save the real questions till later, I would appreciate it. And Assistant Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The purpose of today, I believe, is to present an overview of the Chemical and Mental Health Services budget activities and the corresponding change pages. These activities include children's mental health grants and operations, adult mental health grants and operations, chemical health grants and operations, and then state-operated service activities, which includes mental health services, the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, the Minnesota Security Hospital, and the Minnesota Extended Treatment Options Program that we typically refer to as MEDO. I want to mention that our organizational structure does not line up neatly with the budget structure, so our activities are dispersed throughout your budget document. And we have provided you with a packet of information. Some of that, for those of you who are in Representative Walker's committee, it is repeat information, but I think the most important piece of that packet for today is an index that tells you how our pages are dispersed throughout the document. So the other information is really background material for you to look at your as time allows, but I will not be necessarily referencing those documents specifically. I want to start out in an overview by saying that we're experiencing tremendous transition and change in this area. We're developing a more effective and a more robust community-based infrastructure for children and adult mental health services and chemical health services. For both chemical and mental health services, we're promoting and developing new services and practices that are evidence-based. Chemical health is modifying its administrative rules to better support practice and improve client outcomes. We're also closing mental health units at 4 regional treatment centers and supporting the local reuse planning for these campuses. In addition, we're building a 50-bed nursing home at St. Peter, which will serve a forensics population that will result in the closure of the Agua Ching facility, and we're involved in the reuse planning of that campus as well. We're also building a 400-bed facility on the Moose Lake campus to address the growth trend in our sex offender program. These changes are driven by some common themes. There's significant growth in demand for community-based mental and chemical health services. There's growing recognition that mental illness and chemical addiction are chronic health care diseases with treatment that is most effective when integrated into the mainstream of the health care delivery system. There's also growing recognition that we need to coordinate and integrate all services. So while mental and chemical health care needs to be integrated into other primary care, for many patients, primary health care needs to be better coordinated and integrated with social services. Research, science, and technology are improving our understanding of mental illness and chemical addiction, as well as improving treatment methods and treatment outcomes. We need to take advantage of the growing body of research and apply what we are learning by developing services that focus on methods that have proven to result in better patient outcomes. For both mental and chemical health services, there is a value for providing services as close as possible to the patient's community and family. The expansion of effective community-based care and treatment is replacing the facility-based and institutional models that we once relied upon for patient protection. I've mentioned in previous hearings, in the joint hearing, as well as in the mental health committee hearing, about the social, personal, and economic costs of untreated mental illness and chemical dependency. I wonder, I think it's worth repeating, the 25% of the Minnesota Family Investment Plan, our economic support program, caregivers have a serious mental illness. 30% of the children in juvenile justice system have a serious mental illness. 16% of adults in correction system have a mental illness. 60% of persons with serious and persistent mental illness also suffer from chemical dependency. People with serious mental illness on average die 25 years earlier than the general population. People with mental illness and chemical addiction are more likely to be homeless, victims of trauma, unemployed, living in poverty, incarcerated, and so on. Mental illness and chemical addiction is a leading cause of productivity loss in the workplace. Congressman Ramstad said in a recent interview on NPR that untreated depression alone costed our nation about $70 billion per year. When you look at all mental health, untreated mental health, the productivity cost reaches nearly $150 billion a year. Currently, our public investments in these areas include public-funded mental health services for programs administered or supervised by DHS of about $665 million per year. This does include the health care programs as well as state grants, and the mental health services that are provided in the regional treatment center mental health units. Public-funded chemical health services cost approximately $130 million per year. Over $100 million of this investment is accounted for by a consolidated treatment fund, vendor payments. Approximately $11 million is paid for treatment that is provided through the prepaid medical assistance program. The remaining investment is for treatment supports and substance abuse prevention efforts. State appropriations for the sex offender program are approximately $60 million per year. The remaining appropriations for state-operated services, including the security hospital, the VITO program, and the forensics nursing home in Aguaching, exceed $80 million per year. I'm going to move into children's mental health, Mr. Chair, and the pages that I will be reflecting on are the Children's Mental Health Grant Accounts, which are on page 70 and 73C of your book, as well as the Children's Mental Health Division Administration, which starts on page 101. I'm going to give you an overview of the activities in those areas without giving specific reference to the budget pages. State grants for children's mental health include screening grants for children in child welfare and juvenile justice systems, as well as targeted case management grants to counties to offset a portion of their cost of these services. Children's mental health services also benefit from the federal mental health block grant that is found in the adult mental health grant section of the budget book. In addition, many children receive their mental health services through the prepaid medical assistance program. It should also be noted that in the beginning of state fiscal year 2004, about $20 million, a little over $20 million in existing children's mental health grants were consolidated with other grants to form the Children and Community Support Grant that was found in in another section of the document for Family and Children's Services. The Children's Mental Health Division, with a staff of about 15, directs state policy for children's mental health services and works with counties, providers, the state's health care programs, and other children's services like education to implement this policy. Our traditional focus for children's mental health has been on children with serious emotional disturbance. This is a combination of psychiatric diagnosis, chronicity, and impact on functioning. This category of need represents about 5% of preschool children and 9% of school-age children. Our new focus in children's mental health acknowledges that functional impairments can be minimized or avoided with early identification and appropriate treatment. Services are beginning earlier, and we are trying to support more services for children with emotional disturbance. In state fiscal year 2006, over 42,000 children and adolescents received county or state-financed mental health services. 23,000 of these children received some county service. Nearly two-thirds of these were enrolled in the Minnesota health care programs. Over 19,000 children received services through the Minnesota health care programs without county involvement. So if you look at the state's involvement relative to the county involvement, there's significant overlap, but the state serves many more children than those that see the county-based system.
Commissioner, mental illnesses we're talking about, do those include autism and attention deficit disorder?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. As far as children's mental health services, pediatrics, and as far as their core services, pediatrics and primary care are the most typical setting for receiving mental health care and not typically reflected in mental health statistics. Clinical mental health services are also provided. This is a continuum from outpatient to community-based rehabilitative services to crisis services, day treatment, partial hospitalization, residential treatment, and inpatient hospitalization. Case management is the most typical service to be provided by county in its role as a local mental health authority. Counties are also responsible for ensuring an available infrastructure of service. There's also been a great deal of interagency coordination. Minnesota has established a system of family services and children's mental health collaboratives to assure coordination across local child-serving systems. I'll mention that the children's mental health collaboratives and the family service collaboratives have experienced significant losses in federal revenues recently, about $40 million per year. So that's one of the challenges that we have before us. Children's mental health services involve, again, many other children's services. I mentioned education. I mentioned the relationship with juvenile justice. I mentioned the relationship with child welfare. And in all these areas, there are issues of racial and ethnic disparities that raise prevalent themes. Our current priorities for children's mental health are early identification and early and effective intervention, access to services, better quality, and better outcomes. Recent accomplishments include improving access and quality of mental health care in primary care settings. We are involved in what is called the ABCD Project with children's hospitals and clinics and centric care in the St. Cloud area. And these are projects that develop co-located services of mental health professionals with pediatricians and in primary care settings. We've also developed a quality improvement system, and we're piloting outcome measures in 31 counties. We're involved in the introduction of the Hawaii database to infuse research evidence throughout clinical practice. The Hawaii database is a product, we're developing a web-based system that includes all of the research that is available on treatment for children's mental health issues. This research will be available through the web to clinicians to refer to. They can enter information such as the child's age, the child's diagnosis, the race, the ethnicity, and so other demographic information, and that database will provide treatment that's been used with children with those descriptions and provide information on treatment that works best and treatment that doesn't work so well. So this is a clinical tool. It's not a clinical decision maker, but it's a wonderful clinical tool. We've also been involved in the creation of standards for service provision and documentation. These quality efforts extend beyond the public system through partnerships with providers of commercial products as well. So we're excited about that because many of our children move in and out of the public system and into the commercial product area. Our challenges in children's mental health are still many. Decreases in spending for children's mental health particularly affected contracted services and respite care. Dramatic reductions in the primary funding through the local collaborative time studies that supported the collaboratives I've already mentioned. They have about $40 million per year. We're facing potential Medicaid changes that will result in reductions to federal revenues for targeted case management, which for mental health alone, both adult and children, is about $35 million a year. I believe in the child welfare area, it's about $50 million per year. Those final rules have not yet been issued, so we're not exactly sure, but we're basing our estimates on what we've seen occur in other states, such as Massachusetts. We also experience provider shortages in children's mental health, including psychiatry and child psychology, culturally specific services, and providers who are able to treat low-incident conditions. And as is the case in our entire mental health system, we suffer from fragmentation. Our mental health system has been put together in bits and pieces. We've been trying to access funding where funding is available, and when you look back, those are all worthy efforts, good efforts, but it creates a system that's fragmented and difficult to navigate. Mr. Chair, I'm going to move to the adult mental health services area.
Representative Eric.
Thank you, Chair Huntley. Commissioner Koistra, can you provide us with, or maybe first I should ask, do the counties submit to you the results of all these grants that we send to them And if they do, are you able to provide us with some kind of analysis of how effective these grants are? And under Children's Mental Health Crisis Grants, which out-of-state county has been given a grant? It is not listed here. It says Metro Counties and one out-of-state.
Chairman Huntley, Representative Peterson, or I'm sorry, Erickson. Hard to read around the corner. I am Don Allen. I am with the Chemical and Mental Health Services Administration at DHS. In response to your question, we get our current data collection capacity for county-provided services has a number of shortcomings. They provide process-related information. We get information on who they serve and what services they get. We do not get currently information on what outcomes are attained. That was a portion of the proposal that was put forth as part of the governor's initiative last year. We were funded to begin that, and when Commissioner Koester referenced that we're piloting those outcome measures in 31 counties, that's what he was speaking towards. So we're making progress there. We do not currently have that. If you're interested in information about how many kids get served and what kind of services, we do have some of that.
And then, Mr. Chair, and sir, how about which is the one outstate county in which we have the crisis grant?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, we don't know yet. We will be issuing that RFP for the next year. We started in the metro area with the crisis grant.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, and recognizing your instruction to keep things short today, I just maybe ask the Commissioner if you could provide me some information on the services that you've been providing to children related to autism. If you can give me an increase and some numbers on where you were, where we're at today, and what your expectations are going forward, I'd appreciate that. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, we'll provide that
information. Continue, Mr.
I'm going to move into the adult mental health services area. Again, if you refer to your index, the adult mental health grants are on page 180. The division administration is on page 213. The adult mental health services area, the division has a staff of about 24 that manages state policy for adult mental health services and works with counties, providers, the state's health care programs, other systems like economic assistance, housing authorities, and corrections to implement this policy. The Minnesota adult mental health system is guided by a commitment to recovery. This calls for a person-centered, strength-based system that enables the person to live a meaningful life in the community while working to achieve their full potential. Our emphasis is upon the delivery of quality services that produce sound clinical outcomes. Our target populations include about 211,000 adults who have serious mental illness. About 77 adults have a serious and persistent mental illness, and about 60,000 of these receive at least one service in the public system. For many publicly funded individuals, the county administers services as the local mental health authority and either provides or contracts with providers of services. Since 1996, planning for selected service delivery has been provided through the formation of 16 adult mental health initiatives. And this went statewide in 1996. Similar to children's mental health, there are many adults who receive mental health services through our public-funded health care programs, but who do not receive services from the county. And again, this is about half of the total adults served. About half are involved in the county system, and about half are just involved in state-funded health care programs. The adult mental health priorities include the development of a recovery-based delivery system as part of health care, access to quality services, providing the right services in the right amount at the right time, and implementation of evidence-based practices that produces sound client outcomes, maintaining and strengthening services for those with mental illness while supporting and developing earlier intervention strategies. The core treatment services include has traditionally included clinic-based services such as psychotherapy, partial hospitalization, medication management, and day treatment. Recently, there's been tremendous growth in the development of community services that, again, are evidence-based. The development of the adult mental health initiatives that I mentioned earlier has been critical to improving the community service infrastructure. but the growth in service options since 2002 has been unprecedented. These services include rehabilitation services, such as adult rehabilitative mental health services. These are support services that are provided to an individual in the community that include symptom reduction, daily living skills development, and other support services that both assist the person in living in their home and working. It also includes assertive community treatment, which is a evidence-based practice, a treatment approach that includes a cross-section of mental health professionals and clinicians, and who have small caseloads, who treat individuals who need intensive care and treatment in order to stay in their own homes, and often this is referred to as a hospital without walls. We are also developing intensive residential treatment services, and these are best described as subacute care services for individuals who do not need a hospital level of care, but for which they do need some time in residential placement to stabilize as a result of a mental illness episode. And then the other major service we're developing is crisis services for adults. Since 2002, we've developed 112 of the adult rehabilitative mental health service providers. We've developed 20-plus crisis response providers, 26 assertive community treatment teams, and 32 intensive residential treatment programs. Targeted mental health case management that we provide through a brokered model service serves approximately 21,000 individuals. We have also expanded community-based inpatient hospitalization, and we now have 17 contract beds that bring an average length of stay of 28 days. In calendar year 06, there were 650 admissions into these contract beds. We've also developed, through state-operated services, 16-bed, I should say we are developing. We have 7 developed, and 3 will be developed by the end of the summer. 16-bed state-operated community behavioral health hospitals throughout the state, and the average length of stay in these hospitals is 20 days. We've received, with respect to the state-operated behavioral health hospitals, we've been receiving a lot of feedback about the quality of the services in those areas. I will mention that the average length of stay is important because in the older regional treatment center designs, the average length of stay were much higher. They were used more for residential placement. Individuals stayed in those placements after stabilization was achieved. For example, in Anoka today, the average length of stay is around 90 days. In addition to these services, we also provide or partner in the provision of a number of other support services. We work with DEED to provide competitive and extended employment services. DEED is the primary provider of these services, but these services are administered through an interagency agreement. We also work with MHFA, who provides Bridges funding. This is rental subsidies for individuals who are waiting to be provided Section 8 certificates for rental assistance. We also provide crisis services that help retain housing for individuals who are hospitalized for up to 90 days. Many times when an individual is hospitalized, they do not have the income to retain their housing, and these are subsidies provided to individuals so they have a place to return to after hospitalization is complete. We also support drop-in centers often run by consumers for social and recreational activities. Other current activities include working with continuing care on the demonstration to maintain independence and employment. This is a federal demonstration project that is about $50 million, I believe, over 5 years. And this demonstration project provides health and mental health services and employment supports to assist people with serious mental illness so they can maintain employment. These individuals are not currently considered to be disabled, and this is a project that is intended to provide the supports necessary to prevent them from becoming disabled. We also have just received a 3-year grant from the federal government to develop integrated dual disorder treatment. This is treatment for people who have both mental illness and chemical dependency. The prevalence of that, again, is about 60% of the people with serious and persistent mental illness also have a chemical dependency, so this is an important grant for us, and we're developing integrated disorder services throughout the state with the use of this grant. We also have pilot projects with the Southeast Asian and Somali communities. We're working in collaboration with MHA and other key stakeholders to address issues of long-term homelessness, which, of course, people with mental illness is a particular issue for people with mental illness. And then, even with these positive changes, there are just as many challenges. These include the coordination and integration of mental and physical health care, continued development of community-based services to reduce unnecessary emergency department admissions and hospitalizations, to address inequities of service access. Another challenge is the continued development of a range of employment and housing options. While we are providing some employment services and while we are trying to assist in housing, housing is a significant issue for individuals with mental illness, especially in the metro area, although it's not limited to the metro area. We're trying, as with children's mental health, to address the shortage of mental health professionals, especially psychiatrists. I believe the figure that comes to mind is that Minnesota is about 30% of the national average in terms of the number of psychiatrists per capita. We have challenges in developing more culturally competent services. Minnesota is obviously becoming much more diverse, and our service capacity is not keeping up with those needs. We are also developing mechanisms to measure outcomes and performance, and developing a public financing structure that is easy. We need to develop a public financing structure that's easy to understand and supports the provision of treatment in the right place, time, and location. Mr. Chair, I believe the next piece of the budget book is the mental health initiative, but I don't know whether there's questions about the base budget before you want me to go forward with the mental health initiative.
Any questions on the base budget?
Great.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, our first budget change page is on page 183, and it goes for quite a few pages after that. This is the Governor's Mental Health Initiative. It's a comprehensive initiative that takes significant steps towards a redesign of Minnesota's mental health system. It calls for an investment of $45 million in fiscal years 08 and 09 and $75 million in fiscal years 10 and 11. This redesign is developed in recognition that untreated mental illness has significant personal, social, and economic costs that I've already referenced, that mental illness is a disease of the brain and needs to be treated in the same manner that any disease is treated in our healthcare delivery system. Treatment must be available upon the onset of symptoms. Treatment must be vigorous and disciplined and must rely on methods that are proven to be effective. Treatment is most effective when mental health care and physical health care are integrated. Health plans report that 60% of psychotropic medications health plans report that 80% of psychotropic medications are prescribed by primary care physicians. 60% of children who are prescribed psychotropic medications are prescribed by primary care physicians without any accompanying mental health services. People with mental illness have a greater likelihood of suffering from diabetes. The risk of breast cancer is over 9 times higher for women with serious mental illness. Depression occurs in 35 to 45% of patients who have a heart attack. 50% of cancer patients will suffer from mental disorders. People with mental illness receive less preventative care, and real health care needs are often not addressed because there's a greater likelihood that health complaints will be disregarded by physicians. I think the most telling statistic is one that I've already mentioned, that people with serious mental illness, on average, live 25 years less than the general population. This points to the significance of integrating mental health care treatment in the physical health care system. As with any health care treatment, adults and children with mental illness are best served near their homes, families, and communities. We need to expand and improve community-based options to effectively replace archaic institutional models and avoid unnecessary hospitalizations. This must include strong working connections and relationships between our health care and social service systems of care. Effective treatment relies on a system of care that is understandable, that's easy to navigate, that promotes access, and is supported by a stable service delivery and financial infrastructure. In recent years, we've made significant improvements in our mental health care system, but we fall well short of meeting these principles of treatment. Our system of care often requires mental illness to become disabling before treatment can be accessed. The door to mental health treatment is too often the emergency room door or the door to a psychiatric hospital bed. In the metro area, we cannot keep up with the demand for psychiatric beds. There's far too many avoidable admissions, and there are far too many delayed discharges resulting from gaps in the community-based service system. We are losing psychiatric bed capacity because mental health treatment is recognized by the healthcare industry as a loss leader. We have a shortage of housing and residential options that keep people in more expensive hospital beds. Minnesota has a significant shortage of mental health professionals that I've already mentioned. Mental health treatment is too often delivered in primary care settings without access to mental health professionals. This is not what we mean by integration. Minnesota is rapidly becoming more diverse. We lack culturally competent services. We lack treatment for low incidence needs. We rely on financing structures, as I've already mentioned, that rely too heavily on local funds that are difficult to navigate and have just been cobbled together. These are the shortcomings that we're trying to address in this initiative. This initiative is designed to honor and build upon the work and efforts of the Minnesota Mental Health Action Group. It is a product of collective thought, effort, and thought. It's not an initiative that was put together in a room in the Department of Human Services. This is an initiative that's been put together through collaboration with all the stakeholders involved in the mental health area. The Mental Health Action Group is a volunteer group of consumers, consumer reps, all types of providers, including community providers, hospital providers, all types of payers, and state and county representatives who have been meeting regularly since the fall of 2003 to actively address the needs of Minnesota's mental health system. The Minnesota Mental Health Action Group has identified critical outcomes for service delivery that we embrace in this proposal. Public and private partnerships to assure that all aspects of the mental health system are working. A new fiscal framework for public and private mental health funding that creates rational incentives for right care to be delivered at the right time. Quality of care for consumers and families as measured by standardized assessment of performance and outcomes. Innovative workforce solutions to assure an adequate supply of appropriately trained and qualified professionals. Early identification and earlier intervention of mental health issues so that families and consumers are willing to seek and access help when needed, and coordination of care and services so that the mental health system is easy to navigate. The Mental Health Initiative was first introduced by the governor last year. At that time, it again was based upon the work of the Minnesota Mental Health Action Group, and while we made some small strides in 2006, we fell well short of receiving the legislative budget and policy commitment that is needed. Since last session, the Minnesota Mental Health Action Group has continued to meet regularly, and we have continued to work with stakeholders to improve the initiative, so there are some changes this year. As I walk through the components, I'll try to mention some of the changes from last year for those of you who are familiar. The first item of the initiative includes the adoption of a consistent mental health benefit set across all public programs. The current medical assistance fee-for-service benefit set approximates the model benefit set endorsed by the Minnesota Mental Health Action Group. But general assistance medical care and Minnesota care provide only basic mental health services. As a result, access to community-based mental health services for those enrolled in general assistance medical care and Minnesota care rely on the availability of services funded by counties and to some lesser extent state grants. Often funding is not available to meet the needs of these individuals and others who are underinsured or uninsured. Since access often depends on local dollars, there are significant inequities of service from county to county. This often requires people with mental illness to get worse before they can get services, and then services provided tend to be the most costly. This proposal will result in services such as assertive community treatment, intensive residential treatment, crisis for children and adult rehabilitative mental health services, case management, and children's residential treatment to become part of the benefit set for all public health care programs, including not only MA, but general assistance medical care and Minnesota care. In the base year, the cost of adding these services will be paid through the transfer of state grants to counties, representing only the cost of services now provided to counties to individuals who will benefit from the expanded benefit sets in these other programs. Growth in the health care programs that result from this change is paid for through with new money. And I want to mention that in this grant transfer, we have worked very closely with counties in making sure that it's client-specific transfer. We identify clients who are now receiving these services by the counties, and that money will follow them through the health care programs, and then the growth in those programs, again, would be paid with new funds. Representative Abram.
I have 19 questions, but I'm only going to ask two. So the rates for providers you're paying in this new expansion, is it going to be the same MA rates that were paid before generally, which are a problem for providers? And the second question I have is, well, do that first, and I'll ask another question is short, too. Do you know that offhand?
Commissioner.
Hold
it. Chairman Huntley, Representative Abler. Because the payments then would be going through the health plans, they would be the rates that were negotiated between the providers and the health care plans.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I just want to caution the department that if you set up a program on rates providers can't work for, they're not going to work for it. So the rates you pay now are low, and people don't want to do business there. Just a comment, not a question. The last thing you can answer later, do you know what the tails will be in 2012 and 2013? You can get that back to me later. You go through 2011. Do they stay kind of flat, or do they go up?
You know. Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, we'll get back to you on that. I don't know that we have that forecasted. I will mention that some of the investment in this proposal is grants, because it's grants for the uninsured, so those are essentially base budget grants. They do not grow with the forecast, but I think your question is probably specific to the health care programs then that do grow with the forecast, so we can give you the trend.
Thank you.
On that.
Much obliged.
The next area is to implement an intensive mental health outpatient treatment benefit within Minnesota health care programs. This is a benefit that will allow the provision of dialectical behavioral therapy, which is a best practice for treating borderline personality disorders. Currently, this practice cannot be billed without using multiple billing codes. And as a result, what we have is providers trying to bill best practice services across multiple billing codes, not being able to do so very efficiently, not being very encouraged to provide needed services. So this is just simply providing a single billing code for the payment of that service that we think will improve access and do a better job of reimbursing costs of delivery.
This is another example of the reimbursement system in our healthcare system that does not reward doing the right thing.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly right. The next area is to increase the portion of the public health care, the portion of public health care clients whose mental health services are provided through integrated care networks, and demonstrate methods to improve the coordination between mental health care, physical health care, and social services. We have already presented information on the importance of integrating physical health care and mental health care, and the need to create stronger links with social services. This aspect of the proposal develops preferred integrated care networks, initially through an RFP process that will include an evaluation component. The RFP and project evaluation will be developed in consultation with a stakeholder group that will primarily be made up of members of who are consumers or consumer representatives. The RFP criteria will focus on issues critical to the integrated delivery of mental health services, including care coordination, provider networks, service access, member communication, and protections. Respondents to the request for proposal must be partnerships that are developed between counties and healthcare networks. This initial phase of integrated service development is limited to, and by the way, there's an error on the page. It's limited. It says 20%. It should be, say, 40% of the state.
Could you give us the page and approximate location? Okay, it's the last full line under the first bullet there. 40%.
Mr. Chair, I will also...
That's on page 185.
I'll also mention that there are some other changes that need to be made to the page, and this page will be corrected during the forecast change page process in late February. Probably the good news is one of the casualties of a very open public collaborative process are changes in the last minute. So I think it's probably good that we're making some changes here because it's part of the input that we've received from others. The contracts with the health networks participating in the integrated care partnership will include specifications addressing integration of physical and mental health care, early identification and intervention, communication with members and other member services, ease of enrollment of persons eligible for both MA and Medicare special needs plan. I should mention that this is a real opportunity for us to bring together a lot of payment systems, not only our state and county payment systems, but also the federal Medicare payment systems as well.
Commissioner, if you could complete your thoughts here for about a couple
sure.
of minutes. We're a little bit over right now, and there's a very large group going to be coming in here.
Mr. Chair, I think I'd rather get out first. The specifications.
I wish I could join you.
The specifications will include risk screening procedures, treatment planning and care coordination, provider networks, including specialty providers, which I know is a concern as we make changes, transportation service monitoring for both Medicaid and Medicare, administrative simplification for providers. I'll finish this section, Mr. Chair, then maybe we can come, if that works for you, then we can come back
later
and finish the page. Eligible clients with mental illness in participating regions or counties will be enrolled in the network unless they choose to stay in fee-for-service or participate in another PMAP program. I want to point out this is another change from last year's bill when we were proposing this as mandatory enrollment. Now individuals will be enrolled in these programs unless they say, I want to stay in the fee-for-service program or I want to enroll in another PMAP plan that has not a preferred integrated service provider. The proposal also eliminates the prepaid medical assistance opt-out for children with serious emotional disturbance. And there's language that implies limited opt-out, Mr. Chair, that also will need to be changed on the budget page. So I apologize for that, but I think that these are improvements in the minds of our stakeholders and constituents. That's the piece on the integrated care networks, and then there's about probably 10 or other so other items in this.
Mr. Commissioner, we'll have you back, but for the members of this committee, the governor's initiative is probably one of the more important things we're going to do this year. Minnesota will probably lead the country if we can make some of these changes, and it's a part of our healthcare system that has really not worked very well, both in Minnesota and nationally, and it's very important that we improve it. So with that, I will adjourn the meeting, and Commissioner Koistra will have you back as soon as we can get you in here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, very much.
So, meeting adjourned.